better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be ready to do.
Come over here, kid, Lisa. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. And you fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Delicious. Have you had a delicious day? I hope so. Good evening. It's Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Jordan. Hot enough for you, huh? I felt like such a baby. I was on my way to Mouthful, and I looked at the temperature gauge in my car, and I pride myself on how good that little Volkswagen's temperature gauge is. And it said something like 81, and then it dropped down to 76. I thought, God, I'm really, if I'm whining this much and that's only how hot it is, I thought sure it was in the high 90s. Anyway, welcome to summer. And, you know, time to think about cocktails, don't you think? I could use one right about now. I tend to drink wine more often than I drink cocktails. I don't necessarily know why. Maybe because it's easier. You pour yourself a glass as the sun is starting to set, and there you go. But I realized when I got a sample in the mail, a nice email from a woman, and got this pretty little box of mixers. And I thought, you know, if you do have a gin and tonic or any number of other drinks, and I probably say gin and tonic because I think I recently watched something where everyone was drinking gin and tonics, some old 1960s show or something. You think about the gin, or you think about the effect, or you think about the party. You don't really think about the tonic aspect. And so that's what we're featuring today. Fever Tree is a line of high-end, natural, clean, delicious tonics. And I think that a lot of thought and time has gone into making them. We have one of the founders of the company, Tim Warlow, with us tonight. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for coming up. You were in lovely Sausalito today.
That's right. And I've only just arrived in Sausalito all the way from the UK. So
whereabouts in the UK?
From London.
London.
So I'm reveling in this Californian sunshine. I can't tell you the difference from the drizzle of London.
Oh, yeah. Now, I should say my first day in London, I had really just like 16 hours between planes. And I went to the Tate and sat in Trafalgar Square. It was so hot.
Was it?
It was so hot. And I was there, you know, I had my winter clothes with me because, you know, it's London and I know the reputation. I was like, this is different.
Well, that's not usually what people report on their travels to London. Yeah. I'm delighted to hear that you had that experience.
I was there another time for 3 days, and it was, you know, shorts and, you know, sleeveless weather again.
Right. Well, you must bring the Californian weather with you.
Well, I want to come when it's London weather. I think the fog's rather appealing. So tell me, how did Fever Tree – tell me about the birth of Fever Tree.
Well, it's a company that I and a colleague started well, the first bottles came off the run just over 4 years ago. And we both came about it from separate ideas and backgrounds, but with the same principle in mind. And it's rather, as you summed up in the introduction, is that it seemed extraordinary to us that the premium spirit category And spirits in general have grown and grown.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the interest in spirits and the premium spirits, particularly mm-hmm. these mm-hmm. boutique, these artisanal spirits.
Yeah, well, like just right here, we've got Hangar One and their line of St. George
Quite.
Spirits. We've got the
209 Gin, where 209 I visited gin. The distillery mm-hmm. not long ago.
Right.
Exactly, these fantastic yeah. products.
And a lot of interest in just cocktail competitions. And we've got people, I know you know Scott Beattie up at Cyrus.
Exactly.
And his yep. new artisanal cocktail book.
Quite. There's been this revolution, and mm-hmm. rightly so, in cocktails. And I think his book's called Artisanal Cocktails. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, very much sums it up, is that people are starting to look at the cocktail culture and how to improve, and these mixologists have come mm-hmm. to being. And so people, again, are starting to take this category seriously. And it struck us that all of this time and attention that goes into the spirit, and not to mention the cost when you're buying a very good quality mm-hmm. spirit. And then you refer to gin and tonic. Gin and tonic, certainly in the UK, I know it's often a little different here, but two-thirds of that gin and tonic is the mixer,
right.
is
no,
the tonic water.
Isn't that what it
and
is
And no
here?
One ever concentrates on the tonic water.
No.
And I'm afraid the whole point of mixers is it's become a very commoditized category, long overlooked, long forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
It's become the preserve of just a couple of large global brands. And the quality has gone out of them. The high fructose corn syrups have started to appear, the stabilizers, the preservatives. And so our view was, we thought very simple, that if you're going to go to this trouble of spending your money on a good quality spirit, then you need a good quality mixer to go along with it. And so hence we started with our tonic water in the UK. It took us a good 12 months to develop, which is a painful 12 months, I can assure you, having given everything up in pursuit of these mixers.
Could you describe the process? First of all, we should probably say, what is, at its simplest, what is tonic water?
Well, I'm delighted you asked that, because that's also one of the things, is that mixers have been lost, mm-hmm. the knowledge and understanding of mixers. People consider them to be just a sort of sweetened, bittered product. And the truth is, tonic water came about as a way of giving a dose of quinine or
quinine,
as you
quinine
say.
Quinine or
exactly.
quinine.
Well, exactly.
I have this vague memory of hearing it called quinine water.
That's
Is that
right.
True? Okay.
Exactly, because it was actually the British army that uh-huh. invented tonic water.
And that's
tonic
a protection
water.
Against malaria.
Precisely.
Yeah. And it's what's in people who don't necessarily drink or think about tonic water will know the flavor from the rind of grapefruit.
That's right, because there is the quinine is a bittering substance.
Uh-huh.
And so that's that bitterness that you get in tonic water.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, we use it in our bitter lemon as well. And so that's the very essence of tonic water. Mm-hmm. And we went to great lengths researching the history of quinine. And actually, quinine comes from the fever tree, hence the name of our brand. And we traced it all the way back to the original fever trees and the original plantation, which is now the strain, which is still in existence, has migrated and moved to the Rwanda-Congo border, where they produce this fantastic natural quinine. And so that's what we use, and that's the basis of the product.
Mm-hmm.
But also, as you can imagine, this was given to troops out in India, and this very bitter substance was they tried to make palatable. So to do that, they used the natural botanical flavors and citrus flavors available to them at the time,
mm-hmm.
Added sugar, and that was the dose of quinine, you know, so hence the expression, you know, to help the medicine go down, because this was medicinal.
Mm-hmm.
At
now, was
its very
it prophylactic
root.
Or was it curative? I mean, was it something you gave so that you wouldn't get malaria?
Exactly.
Or, okay.
Yeah.
So
quite.
Was it something that would help you once you had it?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm afraid. No, yeah. Quite. It was there to protect. And of course, the way gin and tonic then came about was the troops also realized that tonic was a clear substance. And so you could actually add an expedient of gin to your tonic, your medicine in the uh-huh. morning with no one knowing. And also they thought it made the quinine that much more palatable. So
okay.
that's the whole reason the
oh,
marriage of gin and tonic
uh-huh.
came about. And so that's what we've done. So we use quinine, and we also spend a long time trying to get the right complexity to the flavor and balance mm-hmm. With these citrus and botanical flavors. So we use things like marigold, lime, this wonderful lemon extract
this is all
away
in
from
the,
Sicily,
in
all
the tonic.
All in the tonic water.
You know, and I know you have some chilled. You should pour a little while we're talking about it, so that as you talk about these flavors, I can imagine them.
And the very idea to us was that we wanted to produce a product that didn't mask the flavor of the mm-hmm. gins, and so it was clean and refreshing, mm-hmm. but at the same time, allowed you to actually taste these wonderful gins, because all these gins differ in character, mm-hmm. and purposely so. And so one of the revelations to my colleague Charles, who I started this with, was that he'd done a fantastic job in resuscitating a brand of gin called Plymouth Gin. And in fact,
I have a bottle of that.
Do you?
A friend gave it to me for my birthday.
Yeah, well, it's doing fantastically well. It's a wonderful gin. And he was tasting a room of journalists, actually, in New York, talking about Plymouth Gin and how it differentiated from the other gins in the category. And everyone was in agreement, because you split it with water, which brings out the botanical flavors. You mm-hmm. can taste the difference. And then everyone added the tonic water to it. And, you know, the comment was unilateral. You know, this is rather synthetic, and now you can no longer taste the difference. And so we wanted to do something quite different from mm-hmm. that. And so allow you to taste the gins through, give you this clean, refreshing and sort of wonderful flavor, and restore gin and tonic to this wonderful drink. Because after all, it's a huge cocktail worldwide. And 95% of gin is drunk with tonic water.
Really?
Yeah. So it warrants a good quality product. So here we are. I've opened some, and
so we're going to have tonic sans gin.
And I am going to open a competitor product, but I won't.
And it's
say who.
A little shaken up there.
Exactly.
Did you hear that?
But just so
it looked good. It looked as good as it sounded.
Just so you can see, I hope, what I've just described.
Uh oh. Okay, so I just tasted yours, and it's very subtle. It's very pleasant. Let me taste this one, which has great big huge fat bubbles. Yours has little tiny subtle bubbles. Oh. Well, I don't know if it's fair for me to say this, but it's nasty. But I've always found tonic water nasty.
And this is the problem.
It's nasty, and it has an unpleasantly salty taste. And I love salt, but it's got almost an unpleasantly briny quality around the edges, and it's just kind of nasty.
Yeah. And you know, one of the reasons that I'm out here in California is because this mixology community, which is very prevalent out here in California, had actually been trying to make their own tonic waters. They had got rather fed up with the products that mm-hmm. they were being supplied. And a couple of them got in contact with us because they had been in terrible trouble. Their tonic waters were turning brown. And actually, you mentioned Scott Beattie, Cyrus, and he was one of them. And he tried our products in Europe and said, look, can you please come out here and launch this product, because we're in mm-hmm. desperate need of it.
Now, when did you launch in Europe?
So we launched in Europe 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And out here in the US about 18 months or so ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted to say, coming out here this time, to see how quickly the interest in this premium mixer category, mm-hmm. How fast it's got.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott was absolutely right. This was just... there was a hole waiting to be filled, you know, really. People were waiting for something like this to happen.
Well, I mean, I'm delighted to say that, because that was, you know, certainly our thought at the outset. But as you know, when you start these ventures, mm-hmm. You've got no idea. No one had looked at mixers and improving mm-hmm. them and making a premium range. And so until we got our first bottles off the run and onto the shelves of the retailers and into the bars and restaurants in the UK, until then did we know whether there was a market for it. But fortunately, it was picked up very quickly. Our leading retailer in the UK spotted some promotion about the product, a write-up of it, and took it to the stores, and it sold overnight. And then we had sort of some wonderful outposts of interest, mm-hmm. To the point of one we're proudest of, because it was very early on in our development and life of a brand. was the restaurant in Spain called El Bulli.
Oh, of course.
Yes. It was quite, and someone had bought from the shelves of our retailer in the UK some of our products and actually taken it out to El Bulli and said to the chef there, Farhan Adri, he said, you must try this stuff, knowing the fact that he and like many in the Spanish population are very, very keen on their gin and tonics. Mm-hmm. And so he tried it and reputedly said, you know, at last when he tried it, someone is taking this category seriously. Mm-hmm. And so he got in contact with us and has since been making dishes out of our tonic water because he said, you know, it's got these wonderful ingredients that, you know, warrant being used as a ingredient in cooking, let alone, you know, mm-hmm. as a mixer. So it's exciting to get these endorsements from these top chefs around the world.
Yeah, that's really great. You know, this is really nice. How about a little music, Lawrence? We're talking about Fever Tree, a line of really yummy, all-natural premium mixers. Tim Warlow of London is here in California launching his line of high-end premium mixers, Fever Tree. I love the name. I just love the name and the image of this tree. So what's next? After tonic, the next one that you choose, would it be the logical one in popularity as far as working in a bar, mixing cocktails goes?
Well, the logical one in popularity would be ginger ale.
Okay.
That's the second most widely used mixer.
Now, I know ginger ale primarily is something that you sip when you're really sick with an intestinal virus. So I don't know much about it cocktail-wise. What would you drink with ginger ale?
Well, typically it's dark spirits.
It's what?
Dark spirits. So whiskey.
Okay. Oh, dark spirits.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So bourbon, whiskey, rum, tequila.
Really? With ginger ale?
Yeah, with ginger ale. And the whole reason that came about is that ginger, as I'm sure you well know, is a flavor enhancer.
Oh, yes.
So it actually combines with the smoky, peaty notes
sure,
that you get in these
spirits. Sure, that makes total sense.
And you know, draws them out.
Uh-huh, okay.
And so I hope, as I'll demonstrate with this next tasting, is that tragically, in the evolution of time, the ginger has been reduced and almost left out of the ginger ales that are now sort of commonly available.
Uh-huh.
And so we've gone the other way and we've gone to a great deal of time and trouble actually to find what we believe to be the perfect blend of gingers for our ginger ale.
So there's really ginger in it.
And there's real ginger.
How many types?
Three different types of ginger. So we use a ginger from Cochin in India, which has got this savory, soya saucy flavor note to it, and then ginger from Nigeria, which is much more earthy.
Uh-huh.
And then a great discovery of ours was this fresh green ginger from the Ivory Coast, and I have some of these to smell here.
Oh, these little tiny bottles.
So you should get this citrus lemongrass burst from it, which is
beautiful.
Sushi ginger, I suppose, as many say. But it's very rare, and it's taken, it's extracted quite literally as it's taken out the ground.
Okay, this is the one from the Ivory Coast.
Quite. And so, shall I open one of
the
ginger ale? So,
and I'll hold my cup. Okay,
yes, exactly.
A clean cup.
Exactly, and
we're going to get the off-the-shelf in a brown bag so we don't know the brand.
Quite.
And we're going to do another side-by-side comparison here.
So there is
This is the commercial one. And there's, it's a just kind of, it's kind of bland, kind of bland and sugary.
It's a passing ginger aroma,
yeah.
Isn't that?
Yeah, really, not very, not much at all. Okay, now this is the other one. It's got nice bubbles on it.
So again, as you imagine, if you're having...
Wow, it tastes like, it really, really tastes like ginger.
Quite. And
very much so.
And as you'll see as we go through the tasting, that this is ginger ale, which is unlike ginger beer in so much as it's blended, it's not brewed with the ginger. Mm-hmm. And so it's still subtle, but it's a very noticeable ginger character. And so if you've got a great rye or a great bourbon and you know you uh-huh. mix it with this ginger ale, it does have this effect of drawing mm-hmm. out the flavors.
It's not
it's
overly
a wonderful
sweet
combination
either.
Purposely our
yeah,
our range
is nice.
we've cut back on the sweetness levels that people are now I suppose accustomed to in mixers, because it was mm-hmm. another comment that we were getting that they were overly
sweet. Sweet, yeah.
And so
that's one reason I don't drink a lot of mixed drinks. I don't really like that sweet spectrum very much.
Yeah. Quite agree. And so it's doing very well, our ginger ale, I'm pleased to say. It's mm-hmm. finding its way onto menus, again, as an ingredient, mm-hmm. as well as being used in a whole raft of cocktails, mm-hmm. And just as a straight drink,
yeah,
you know, with whiskey and ginger, et cetera, the ones I mentioned.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can imagine this on a really, really hot night with some ice.
Quite. No, it's a fantastic drink. Uh-huh.
Now, for these aromatics that are going into these cocktails, how do you find them? How do you acquire them for the production? What sort of production facility do you have?
Well, it's the finding of them, which I suppose is the hardest task. Mm-hmm. And in the case of our gingers, we've worked closely with a number of, as they call themselves, sort of plant hunters, mm-hmm. Who actually go out looking for these botanical flavors.
And so they go out and actually look for the plant.
Quite. And so we did quite a lot of research, and conversations have led us to find a couple of very interesting people who have been all over the world, and this is where this discovery, this fresh green ginger came from someone who had been out in the Ivory Coast. And so that was in the case of these gingers, and then they're brought back and they're distilled, or in the case of that one, it's distilled fresh.
Interesting. Well, this is really, really good.
Good.
It reminds me of, and I don't know why it reminds me of this, but I was in Malaysia looking into black pepper.
Right.
And I went to a class, a workshop that two women from England did on essential oils.
Right.
It was really interesting that it was really quite a good brand. And I came back with some black pepper oil. And right now my inclination is to put a couple drops of that black pepper oil in with this ginger. I think it would be really, really good. Not traditional. But I bet Scott Beatty might like it.
Well, this is true. I mean, I was down in New York talking to a restaurateur and getting him to sample the products and also mm-hmm. these botanical flavors that I'm getting mm-hmm. you to smell. And he was so taken by this fresh green ginger. You know, he started dabbing it and, you know, putting it behind his ears. You know, he said, you know, this is worth wearing, let alone drinking.
Yeah, no, it's really, really lovely. The next one, bitter lemon. Is that the next? Would that be the next one?
That's the next in terms of our development,
okay.
Bitter lemon. In the UK, and I think it's very similar here, bitter lemon is rather been forgotten.
Yes, absolutely.
As a mixer, which is a great sadness because it's a wonderful drink, particularly when it's made properly. And in truth, I think that's one of the reasons that it's long fallen off the cocktail list and menu because of the way it's been mistreated. So we have gone back to basics and we've used fresh Sicilian lemon juice. And we use this wonderful lemon extract and oil that we found ourselves in Sicily, which actually, you mentioned essential oils and the perfume industry. Mm-hmm. This is actually the preserve, typically, of the perfume industry, this mm-hmm. oil we use. It's called a Sufumitri extract. And it's the highest top note that you can get from lemons.
Mm, okay.
And it's wonderful. And so that really helps lift our bitter lemon along with this, the Sicilian lemon juice. We also use quinine in there, which is where you get this bitterness from. So typically you would mix this with white spirits, vodka and rum. Vodka and gin. And again, we're finding that due to the quality of it, it's starting to find its way back onto the cocktail list, which is exciting to see because I think it's a great drink and a great mixer.
And a vodka with bitter lemon. Is there a traditional name for that?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
But
so I feel like I'm sort of, I'm dabbling in the territory that was, maybe the domain of the Aussie and Harriet world in the United States, that older generation that knew all the cocktails and drank cocktails. And really, some of these, unless they've been brought back, and some of them have, but the ones that have been brought back have been things like the Manhattan.
Yeah.
Martinis certainly have enjoyed quite a new popularity.
Absolutely.
But certain things, like I wouldn't know what to call something with bitter lemon. It hasn't, I haven't even tasted it yet. It has an interesting
aroma.
Let
me pass it around. Sorry, I'm opening them as we speak. So you get this obvious citrus flavor, but this bitterness. And it's not too sweet, once again.
It's not too sweet at all. And that citrus, it's something that it's really refreshing. And I like bitterness, so that bitterness is very pleasing. But it's more back of the palate bitterness rather than a forward palate bitterness. And that forward palate bitterness sort of, I think, interferes with the other flavors. So if you had a nice alcohol, if you had a nice high-end spirit, you're going to lose that with that really forward bitterness. So this is very nice.
Beautifully
crafted.
And one of the things about using this very high quality natural quinine is it does give this clean bitterness, as you refer to. And so I'm glad you can detect it in there.
Oh yeah, it's lovely. Again, it's lovely. This is a treat. This is really interesting. Is that now these bottles, how many ounces?
So these are 6.8.
Now is this a promotional size or is this how you're actually selling them?
No, this is how we're selling them because this is the perfect size for a double measure of spirit.
Okay.
Or indeed big enough for a highball glass as a soft drink on its own. And it's one of the things I didn't mention about the tonic water and indeed the bitter lemon is carbonation. Is very, very important. As lots of people will tell you that, you know, half the enjoyment of a gin and tonic is before you've even drunk it, is lifting it to the nose.
The little tickles. Yes.
Quite. And you're already getting the aromas of the gin and tonic. And so it's very, very important to get it as carbonated as possible. So we've gone to extraordinary lengths to produce a very heavy duty bottle. To enable us to carbonate it, to put as much CO2 in as we can. Because, again, it's very important as well in the gin and tonic of lifting the flavors from the spirit.
Interesting. So now the product that is here in the United States, have you shifted product? Do you have a production facility here or is it all imported right now?
It's all imported.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's all imported using our UK spring water, this special spring water that we chose right at the outset, which is very soft. And so, yes, you're getting the full benefit of all our development over there.
And where else? So you've got the United States, Canada?
We have, yes. And it's found quite a few outposts around the world. We're in over 20 countries now. But there's no question that, you know, our biggest markets are the UK, Spain, as I mentioned earlier. Gin and tonic, it's very interesting. And this is how habits differ across the world. In Spain, they treat their gin and tonic with great reverence. And they have it as a digestive. So they have it after the meal rather than aperitif, as we typically have in the UK and indeed here in the US. And they serve it in a big highball glass. They serve it in a big balloon red wine glass.
Really?
So you can really, they believe, it's so you can really appreciate the aromas in the same way you would with a red wine. And they're insistent on having the tonic bottle alongside it because it's very important to get a fresh serve every time. And so they have fortunately embraced what we've done here at Fevertree. And so the business has grown very quickly there. And then all sorts of other countries around the world. But which leads us to ginger beer.
Ginger beer. So we're going to tease you with ginger beer, and we'll be right back to find out what it's all about. My guest this evening, Tim Warlow of Fever Few. Thanks for sticking with us. Have you poured yourself a cocktail yet? We're drinking only the mixers here on Mouthful tonight. I thought about having, been wanting to get the people from Hangar One, St. George, up here. But and I will one of these days.
It sounds like an invitation worth but, having.
Yes. Yeah, I want them to come up and talk about their absinthe. Though absinthe is one of the things that you wouldn't add a mixer to.
Not
typically, although there are a couple of cocktails made with absinthe.
Exactly. Again, it's finding its way back onto the cocktail menu.
Absinthe. Oh, yeah. It's on a lot of menu. It launched really with quite a pleasant ruckus.
I think that's right. And it's interesting, actually, in the few weeks I've been out here in San Francisco, I've noticed how prevalent it now is across cocktail menus.
Yeah, it absolutely is. There are a couple places here that have 5, 6, 7 different types of absinthe. Yeah. You know, on their cocktail menus. It's a little place out in Valley Ford, Rocker Oyster Fellers.
Right.
They have just this little teeny, tiny bar, but they have a number of absinthes.
Fantastic.
And,
it's another one for my list that I'm out here to go and try.
Absolutely. They would love your mixers out there, I'm sure.
Fantastic.
So ginger beer.
Ginger beer. And actually, that's really the reason I'm out here is to talk to people about ginger beer. It's a drink that's a very traditional English drink. And the difference, as I mentioned and touched on earlier, is that how it differs from ginger ale is that it should be, and indeed we do, is brew our ginger. Mm-hmm. So we use this fresh ginger that we brew for 48 hours. And so it's a much stronger ginger flavor and character. And again, we use some of those gingers that I referred to earlier that we've found and add to it as well. And so it's quite a complex and strong ginger character.
Good ginger beer is just one of the best things in the world. I love it.
I totally agree. And once again, it's a product that has been cost cut, I think it's probably the best expression. And so, the ginger has started to be replaced with sugar. You also find that it gets replaced with chili pepper because, as you can imagine, chili pepper gives this quick burn.
Sure.
Much different burn. It's a very short, sharp burn. But it has a ginger burn effect in people's
interesting.
And so you'll find that with ours you get this long lasting ginger character, which is an example of the amount of fresh ginger we use. And you mentioned earlier about cocktails, and the two cocktails that many people will know that they use ginger beer for is Moscow Mule, which is vodka, ginger beer and a squeeze of lime, and a Dark and Stormy. Which, again, I've seen on many cocktail
dark
lists.
Dark and Stormy. Now, that's one I don't know.
Which is with dark rum.
Oh, okay.
Ginger beer. And, again, a squeeze of lime. And both of those, I just couldn't recommend them more easily. They're fantastically easy to make. But you need two very good ingredients. And then it's superb.
Well, great. Let's try it.
So on that note...
Okay, let's see there. Got that nice big aroma of ginger.
Should get you sneezing and coughing and.
No, that would eclipse it. It's wonderful. There was a restaurant up in Healdsburg in the early to mid 90s that made their own ginger beer.
Well, that's the other thing.
It's so good.
It's the other thing I've come across is that a couple of the mixologists in San Francisco who I've been to see has said that they've been having to make their own muddle, their own ginger beer, as they describe it.
I make it at home sometimes.
Quite crushing fresh ginger. But as they point out, is that what they lack is the carbonation. Mm-hmm. Because, again, when you're mixing in a cocktail, you want this carbonation.
Sure.
Because it really does bring out the flavors of the spirit as well as, of course, the mixer. And carries the flavors through, and hence the long finish.
Yeah, well, this is my favorite. This is really, really good, just as it is. And it's got that, you know, ginger, real ginger, has so many layers.
Quite.
Such a depth on your palate.
Quite.
And this has that.
And again, as I showed earlier with the different gingers and the smelling of them, is that there is such a variety of gingers out there. And so that's what we've tried to encapsulate here, is by using a number of these different gingers and hence the sort of complexities you say and the layers of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a whole little box over there full of different botanicals. Now, these are the oils, right?
Exactly. And these I've brought with me to show as an example of.
Before you take any more out, though, you have the lids off of two, and I just want you to get the lids on right properly so that you aren't mixing up the aromas.
You're quite right.
I'm just taking care of you a little
bit
here.
Exactly, much needed housekeeping. So one of them that I'm going to show you is this Tanzanian bitter orange oil, which we use in our tonic water. Once again, is a very rare botanical. It's hand-picked, these fantastic bitter oranges.
You can tell that it's citrus.
Yes.
But it's certainly not sweet orange.
Quite.
It's not the orange that you would be familiar with in California.
Quite.
Really interesting.
As I touched on earlier, that we have... lime that we use also in our tonic water. So this is the most intense lime oil and smell that you'll have come across.
Yeah, that's just like the essence of lime. It's like when you get a little spritz of the peel and it goes straight into your nose something.
And an interesting one here, coriander.
Oh, coriander.
Oil.
Now, what is it? Are you using this in one of the...
It is in our tonic water.
In the tonic. That has an almost savory, a definite savory quality to it. Reminds me of when I crush coriander seeds. I'll sometimes crush coriander seeds with salt and rub it into a pork shoulder.
Right.
And I love that flavor of coriander.
I do as well, because it also has this citrus element to
absolutely.
It. It has this orange note that comes out.
Now we're mixing up lids again.
We are. finally, the lemon extract that I mentioned from Sicily that we discovered. And this is something that we also use in our other tonic water product, our naturally light tonic water.
Uh-huh.
Which we use fruit sugar to sweeten it with.
And what does that mean?
So fruit sugar is more intensely sweet than cane sugar. We use cane sugar in all our products.
And fruit sugar, so what fruit would that be?
The denomination of the fruit, it does vary depending on the season, but I believe in this case it's from a citrus fruit.
Citrus fruit,
And so it's more intensely sweet, so you can get away with putting less sugar in, and so it's lower in calorie, but remains all natural.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I mean, this is a unique bit of development in the mixer category to produce a lower calorie, all natural. I mean, ours are all natural, all of our products, which, again, is very rare anyway. But we're very excited by this development, because it's interestingly in the mixer category, diet tonic water is a very large part of the mixer category. And so lots of bartenders, well, quite lots of bartenders said to us, look, you've done such a fantastic job in changing people's perceptions, but still people come in and ask for diet tonic. So can you do something about it? And we thought at the start that it's not something that we would look at. Mm-hmm. But now we've found that using this fruit sugar that we can get a lower calorie product. That's what we've launched, and I'm pleased that it's going very well. Mm-hmm. And I would have thought here in California, it would be a very, very good market for it.
Certainly in Southern California it would.
Interesting.
Definitely. But, you know, probably here as well. I said W-E-L-G really tastes good to me. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It's the Wine Country's most delicious hour, and it is really yummy tonight. I am just loving all of these, especially the ginger beer. Mm. Big tall glass, ice cubes, squeeze a lime, you know, a sunset, you know, a bowl of chips and salsa.
I couldn't agree more. And if you throw some vodka in there as well,
yeah,
all the better.
Yes, all the better. Is there anything in the pipeline? Anything? Now, this box of six-ounce bottles in its very attractive little case that you can then save to use with all kinds of things. And it has a very informative sheet here when you open up the box describing each one. Six bottles fit here neatly. You would have to, like, make a bigger box if you added something else. But are you thinking of
anything? We're always thinking. We spend quite a lot of time in development. And one of the things, as the brand expands around the world, each country also has their very particular mixes that they're interested in and approach us about. But the truth is that this ginger beer is our latest launch. And with that opens up another raft of spirits that and cocktails that we want to work with. And, you know, one of the things that's been very exciting and very encouraging right from the start of the launch of Fever Tree is the spirit companies who have come to us and said, at last, you know, here is a product that I can actually market alongside my spirit with pride, because it makes my product taste better. And so we've worked very hard with lots of the gin companies and the vodka companies, but now with this ginger beer alongside ginger ale, these dark spirit companies as well. So we're doing a lot of development on all fronts.
Well, it sounds great. Come on, Michelle, you can talk. In Japan, there's the yuzu fruit. Any experimenting with that? That seems like it would be a natural for
you. It's interesting you say that. We have experimented with it. We spent quite a bit of time. It has this wonderful sort of tangerine note to it.
And also bergamot.
And bergamot, exactly.
So somebody just brought me one.
Right.
Sitting on my kitchen counter.
Which again has this orangey citrus note.
And some other, not quite smoky, but almost smoky elements, I think.
But we have looked at it, and we've looked at it, and we haven't finished with the development of it. And Japan is a market that we just seem to be launching in. So I'm sure with that will come you know, more requirement for a mixer.
Where can people get these, other than, say, certainly in high-end bars? I would suspect you're going to see more and more of them, especially in wine country, the North Bay.
That's
switching. But what if somebody just wants to buy them?
Well, Beverages and More
Okay.
Have taken the product on right from the start, mm-hmm. And we're delighted with their support. Whole Foods as well.
Mm-hmm. What about little places, independent markets up here, say Traversos? I don't know if you know Traversos. If you don't, I'll tell you all about them later.
Please do, please do. The answer is that we're now finding our way into quite a few of the independent markets.
So that's great to know.
Yeah.
So ask first.
We've got a great distributor on board.
People should ask first at their independent market if they can get them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what's the cost?
It comes out at around about $5.49 to $5.99 for a four pack.
And
that's our retail format. Yeah, okay. So a four pack of these 6.8 fluid ounce glass bottles.
Okay. Oh, and so this format here in the box is
that is for presentation.
This is promotion. Ah, okay. This is promotional.
Sadly, although you say that, but fortunately, the hotel industry have been very interested in our products since launch. Uh-huh. And so quite a few of them have put those on top of their mini bars.
Perfect.
So a cigar box-like.
Sure.
As it is, with the idea that you can then choose with their selection of spirits that they offer.
And then you're based here in San Ramon, correct?
Correct.
And then based in London, in the UK?
Right. Yeah.
Do you have a place people can go to visit?
Well, we produce down in Somerset, and so we do, but it's not a sort of branded production unit.
But people can get information at your website, right?
They can get lots of information at the website.
And the website is fever-tree.
That's correct. .com.
Fever-tree.com. How much longer will you be here in Northern California?
Well, if the weather carries on like this, I'm going to be here for as long as possible. but no, I have plans to be here for another month or so. Uh-huh.
Well, good luck to you. I hope you really enjoy your time here. We love it here.
I don't blame you. I think you're spoiled here in California.
Yeah, I think we are too. Well, Tim Warlow of Fever-tree. Thank you so much for taking the time to come up to our little radio station. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. And thanks to you as well for tuning in to another episode of Mouthful. You know, you can always find us online at krcb.org. Also, you can get a subscription by way of iTunes. If you sign up, it is free. Just type iTunes into the search bar. Hit subscribe and it will be delivered while you sleep into your podcast folder. So if you miss anything or if you just want to hear it again, and later this week, Mouthful's Facebook page will be launching. And on that note, meet me back here next week when we talk with Ernie Shelton of Shelton's Market, where there is a new salt tasting bar in Healdsburg. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.